Hello, and welcome to BitNote. This is David Collins, and we'll be talking about video game music. And thanks to BeatFox for that great opening tune. Alright, so let's start things off, and with a nice little tune from a classic multiplayer game that some of you may know. I certainly do. This is Team Fortress 2. That is a classic tune from a classic game, Team Fortress 2, made by Valve, and that what you heard there was the main theme composed by Mike Marski. Now, looking him up, Mike Marski seems pretty interesting. Not only is he a composer in a lot of Valve games, such as for Left 4 Dead 2, but he is also a visual effects supervisor for The Matrix and Lord of the Rings, so fair juice to him. He also was in a rock band at some stage, although I don't think that's still going, and he's also actually composed the music for a fictional rock group called the Midnight Riders that played in Left 4 Dead 2. So the other week we were having the fictional rock group Old Gods of Asgard from Alan Wake, and now we're having a guy who composed the music for a fictional rock group for Left 4 Dead 2. And both games end up having you battle enemies while standing on a rock stage while a concert is in full progression. So okay, interesting how things parallel like that. Team Fortress 2 is, put simply, an awesome multiplayer game. The huge fun of it is basically in the teamwork. You can choose one of 9 completely different characters, each with their own strengths and abilities. You join a team, and the two teams battle each other for whatever the objective. Sometimes it's to capture intelligence, sometimes it's just to capture control points, you know, advance, sort of like a war and everything. The crazy and really interesting part about Team Fortress 2 is that every single class has its own specialty. You know, there's the scout, which will run really fast and shoot quick shots, but, you know, doesn't take much damage before it dies, and contrast that with the heavy, which is big, bulky, and can take lots of damage and can dish it out, but is very immobile and in certain cases a sitting duck. Then you've got various specialties. You can be the medic and recharge people and keep them healthy and everything, or you can be a spy and disguise yourself as other team members, or you can be an engineer and build, you know, dispensers that heal other teammates, or sentry guns that destroy other teammates. It's crazy because the whole game plays out in some ways like an insanely crazy complex version of rock, paper, scissors. Only it's not just how, you know, only it's not just that simple, it's also how skillfully you play the class. I mean, sometimes you'll have a sniper and a heavy and suddenly they'll meet in a corridor, and suddenly it's a matter of skill. The heavy can just open up his chain gun and at a distance and try to fire at the sniper. But if the sniper is fast enough, he'll be able to take out his sniper rifle, aim for the heavy's head and kill him in one shot. So the question of skill is in which one is more effective. Sometimes you'll be skilled in one class will be more effective, sometimes the other class. And sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's not even like that. Sometimes it's more that everyone's using heavies or snipers, and you need to switch over to the scout. One strategy I used a lot was there's this one level which has a payload, a cart. You have to move it to the enemy base. And a lot of people just go switch to heavies or demomans or soldiers that shoot rockets and try to battle each other. So one of my favorite tricks in that is just to be a scout, which is fast and agile, drink this special power-up that allows you to just be invulnerable for a brief period of time, make it to the cart, and then hide behind it, gradually pushing it forward while everyone's too busy battling themselves out. It's reasons like that that makes the game a lot. There's so many emergent gameplays, as the phrase goes, so many different strategies you can use, and it's no reason that it's still popular today, even years after its original release. It's originally based on this mod for Half-Life, but the company Valve ended up having the rights to it and made their own version. And like for years, people they were hinted at it and talked about it, but you know, well, they didn't really talk about it, but people were keep speculating when it was going to be released, Team Fortress 2. Finally it was, and it's gone on since then. It's actually free to play now. Of course, there are a lot of little bonuses and things you can buy that can enhance it or look cool, or hats you can buy from their games. But if you just want to play it basically and just have a bit of fun, for multiplayer team-based video games, it's hard to find much better. Not impossible, depending on what your tastes are, but hard. I'm going to switch it over to a video game that, I don't know, it's not quite as popular as Team Fortress 2, although maybe actually I'm being unfair. Certainly a lot of people know it. I'll just switch it on and hope you guys enjoy. And that was Positive Force by Magnus Palsson. Sorry, it has some accents that I don't quite know how to pronounce. Also called Soli, which is much easier to pronounce, from the video game VVVVVV. As you can see, it's a classic chiptune, as it's called, which is basically a retro-style game. And the game itself was made by Terry Kavanagh. Now, Terry Kavanagh is actually an Irish game developer. Yep, Ireland does produce its share of video games, or, well, towards the earlier part I thought it could have produced a few more video games, but it's certainly producing a heck of a lot of video games now. I might talk about some more of them in the future, but for now let's focus on Terry Kavanagh. He's an Irish game developer, and he's produced a lot of really small video games that have been had a surprising amount of depth in them. VVVVVV, or also known as the letters V six times, or has people have found their own pronunciation, is one of his first commercial title and probably one of his best known ones. It has the classic Commodore 64 aesthetic and basically takes the plot of you being the captain of a ship that's stranded in some very weird universe, and you have to rescue your teammates who have through to a crazy teleporter accident, have been scattered randomly across this crazy dimension world. It's very, very simplistic graphics, very iconic. But the cool gameplay mechanic is that you can actually flip your personal gravity upside down. You can't jump, but you can flip it. So for instance, if there's a pit in the ground and there's a ceiling overhead, you'd flip the ground, walk on the ceiling, and then flip so you'd walk back on the ground again. And of course, you can't flip while you're in midair. So if you are just... If your ceiling consists of a whole load of spikes and you flip the gravity, there's pretty much nothing you can do to save yourself unless you angle just so you hit a platform just right. It's actually kind of a game that's kind of retro in that aspect, in that it's slightly... Unforgiving is a bad word because there are a lot of save points, but it certainly challenges you when it really wants to. And that's one of the fun things about it, because you really feel challenged. You have to make it through the area, you have to make quick reflex decisions and be able to just navigate this complex open world. And that's actually another fun thing about it. It's open world. You start the ship and it's up to you really who you rescue next. It's actually become a fairly popular indie game. It's available on many online outlets for purchasing, so look it up, and it's great, and it's available for Mac, Linux, and PC. Alright, why don't we move from this indie game onto another slight indie game. It's something a little bit of a different tone we're going for here, but I'll talk to you more in detail about it later. Here we are. That was Total Metal Jacket by Ari Pulkkinen, another tricky to pronounce name, from the video game Shadowgrounds by Frozenbyte Studios. Now, I've been talking a bit about indie games here, actually, and one of the reasons is because I think that especially in the last few years, indie games or independent games are becoming a lot more popular. This is because of how the industry has moved. Back in the 70s and 80s, it was possible for someone to be a bedroom coder, which meant that they could pretty much develop an entire game and sell them, you know, commercially, like for a major platform like the Atari or Commodore 64 or BBC Micro, as some people did, and essentially just have a commercial hit, even though they never really had a studio or office or company to begin with. Moving into the 90s, though, video game sizes increased because consoles became and computers became more powerful. You needed more people to create a game, and so sizes grew bigger and bigger to the point where you couldn't exactly fund absolutely everyone for complete free and wait until the game was released. Development times became longer, and by the early noughties you had massive video game studios with games budgets in the region of millions and millions, breaking the 10 million breaking 100 million budgets in some cases, but pretty much always big companies. Now, while it might sound great to say, hurrah, we've got all this great amounts of money that we can spend on video games, the real life was that while this gave us some great experiences, some truly developed worlds, it also came with its a considerable share of drawbacks. One of the drawbacks is games became a lot less safe. I mean, a lot more safe, sorry. Well, actually, they became... Because video game companies were spending so much money on it, they weren't likely to do it unless it was a guaranteed hit. And most of the time, you can only be guaranteed of the success of something if someone has already done the exact same thing before and been successful at it. But of course, if you do it then they've already been successful at it. A lot of people are doing the other same things. So you got this whole ironic thing of people trying to play it safe, which was ironically not playing it safe, because sometimes you have to take risks in order to go for the most amount of security, which... Well, that's a rant for another time, but the point is, while us gamers got a lot of great games, in some ways games could be soulless a little bit at the time. I mean, I know the guys at behind Epic might take huge offense when I say this, but I think Gears of War is one example. I mean, it's got great art style, it's got great, you know, feel to it, but it just doesn't, it seems soulless in a way, not much personality, and a lot of games are kind of like that. Huge amounts of development, brilliant art assets, you know, a lot of focus testing, and somehow at the end of it you're left with this hugely developed, you know, brilliantly looking, polished game that somehow doesn't seem to stand for anything. And maybe the gameplay will be good and it's nice in its own way, but you're kind of left wondering, you know, where's the spark? Where's the thing that let me know that there were human beings behind this? Where's this odd wink or sly bit of humor? Where's the thing that it's trying to say? And I think that not just with video games, but with every art form, you need to... I mean, we're going to take... There are times when we'll also take a hit in quality just to have a bit of fun, but sometimes you're just asking, you know, where is the voice of the people who made this? So, going... With independent game studios, there's a bit of that coming back. It's not just about expressing things, though. It's also about more diverse gameplay. And I'm going to shoot myself in the foot and at this point and basically say that for all the great things that indie game developers try to do to move things forward and develop and become an art form, the indie game, which what the music I just played was from, is Shadowgrounds, is basically a game where you shoot aliens. Yes, I have spent the entire time talking up indie games as this great savior of creativistic art and masterpieces and everything, and now I've just gone to say that an indie game that I've just been talking about is about shooting aliens, probably one of the most standard, overused video game trope that has ever been used since Space Invaders. And it's just gone on that way since. Now, one of these days, maybe aliens will come down and they'll talk with us. And at that stage, having video games where you shoot aliens might be perceived as slightly racist. But until that time comes, it's certainly an idea that's not going to die anytime soon. Or at least it's not going to die as quickly as the aliens that we shoot in these games. Shadowgrounds, yes, it's about shooting aliens, but not just about shooting aliens. You also blow them up with grenades and torch them with flamethrowers. It, as you can see, it's highly sophisticated in its humor and its level of critique. There is pretty much no political commentary, and the characters are never really meant to have any more development than some 80s cheesy sci-fi movie, and a lot of the times you're actually wondering what sort of people would want to live in these steel, cold, desolate environments that you keep shooting aliens in. At the same time, it's just very good at what it does. You have a larger amount of weapons to shoot the aliens with. You can upgrade the weapons to shoot the alien with. There's sometimes some dialogue or reasons for why you need to go into the next area that you're going to shoot aliens in. And a few years after Shadowgrounds was released, they released another game, Shadowgrounds Survivor, which also involved shooting a lot of aliens in it. And there were some slight differences, but no, with all due credit to the studio, they realized they weren't going to screw with a formula, and they didn't make it a game where you didn't shoot aliens. Nope, they went right forward and made it a game where you did shoot aliens. Now, this studio has actually dealt with other games that are dealing with slightly more interesting themes, but I'm not going to talk about such as Trine, but that's not probably the time that I've talked about it, given the fact that I've spent quite a bit of time talking about games where you shoot aliens. For the record, the composer of that music track was called Mike Moreski, and he was... Sorry, I'm reading the wrong part of the notes here. And the was actually Arike Pulikin, And he also did a lot of his work with Frozen Byte Studios, but he also did the Angry Birds theme, so clearly he's gone on to many different projects. Although I think he's still with Frozen Byte Studios. I really got to research this a little more. Well, I think we're heading on to a few more tracks, so I'm going to skip right now to the soundtrack to one of my favorite video games. Yet again, it's a Dreamcast-era game, but it didn't start with the Dreamcast. I'll leave you guys once again to figure it out, but of course, answers will be after the song is played. And that was the Stage 2 music from House of the Dead 2, the classic light gun game from Sega, opened in the arcades and ported to other platforms. It actually, that music is actually in another game called The Typing of the Dead, which is also one of my favourite games. And the whole difference between Typing of the Dead and House of the Dead 2 is that when in House of the Dead 2 you defeat the zombies with light guns, in Typing of the Dead you defeat them using a keyboard. It is a typing tutor. A typing tutor where you kill zombies. You have sentences and words that pop up under the zombies, and you type those sentences, and when you complete typing them, the zombies die. It is a really awesome game, all said and done. I mean, it's a great way of getting fast at typing, and it's also just got such a great sense of humor, because you get all these different words coming up, and sometimes they can be slightly discongruous to the situation you're kind of in. I mean, to see a zombie pop up and suddenly the word smeghead appear underneath him, just some classic stuff in it. Alright, well, of course, we're moving on to our last song now. And once again, I'm going to cheat slightly with this song. I've cheated before with songs before by having a song that paid tribute to a game, but that wasn't in the game itself. And I'm going to cheat by having a song that's actually in the game, but wasn't actually made for the game itself. It's called Theory of a Dead Man. Music track is called Santa Monica, and the game it's played in is called Fahrenheit, also known as the Indigo Prophecy. I've talked about games that I think will really like I suppose push forward the medium is a really cliched phrase, but just express things that, you know, people want to express. And with Fahrenheit, its creator or auteur, David Cage, really tried to do the things. In some ways, he took inspiration from various movies, but he really did create something new. The game has you started after having been taken possession of and killed someone completely against your you've killed someone completely against your will, and you're desperately trying to figure out what happened, who took control of you, how the whole thing fits together. And so it takes place in New York City modern day when a terrible blizzard is taking place, not to be confused with Max Payne, which also takes place in New York City when a terrible blizzard is taking place. And essentially you move forward, you play both from the perspective of the person who did the act and also the detectives who are also trying to figure out what's going on. It's got a lot of emotion to it, and it really allows you to interact with your environment and stories in a way that rarely happens before. There were some things that Fahrenheit did right that very few other games did. Now, some people kind of talk about how towards the end of the game, yeah, let's not go into that. It just maybe went a little too far into the whole sci-fi crazy stuff happening. But I actually liked it. I've got a strong level of suspension of disbelief, so I just went with the ride. And even though maybe the ending could have been better, which even the creator admits, the game is still classic, and some of the parts in the earlier parts of the game are parts that I don't think very few other games have come close to doing. The music you're about to hear is part of the game's soundtrack, but you can actually listen to it in the game completely your own choice. At one stage you're walking around to the protagonist's apartment and you flip on the radio and your music system can play four songs from the same band that does this song. So it's kind of funny as it does that. You can flip on the music and then walk around your apartment, do random other stuff. And a great way of mixing music and video games so that people listen to the songs, but in a way that makes sense in the environment. Here we have Santa Monica by Theory of a Dead Man. And since this is our last track, thank you for listening to us. This has been BitNote with David Collins.
More than this, I ask for more. left me to remain with all your excuses for everything. And I remember the time.